you'll see the first source on your page is the pasuk that we read just yesterday. Arur Masi Gvul Reyehu. The Omar Kol Ha'om Amen. Rashi gives an extreme case of Masi Gvul Reyehu, and that's a person who steals karka. But if you take a look on page 2 of Yemar Makomos, you'll see that Masi Gvul Reyehu applies in a different category, which is called Yored Leumnoso Shel Chavero, which basically means, in our terms, illegal competition. And the Gemara actually derives from a pasuk in Tanakh that when the Nevi'im, you know, each one of the Nevi'im, the Gemara says at the end of Zemakis, reduced the Tariq Mitzvahs to various major principles. And one of the principles that we find, I think if I'm not mistaken, it's Yishayahu HaNavi, he says, Lo asal re'ehu ra'a. He hasn't perpetrated evil against his friend. And the Gemara says that this is a reference to Yored Le'umnaso Shel Chaver, which is, I guess in halachic ethics, that would be called illegal or unfair competition. Oh, I made a mistake. It's not Yishayahu, it's David HaMelech. David HaMelech reduces the Taryag to 11, and one of those is Shelo Yered Lumnaso Shel Chavero. Strange, the Gemara in Sanhedrin derives it from a different pasuk, a pasuk in Yechezkel, and that's the simple pshat in the pasuk is talking about immorality with someone else's wife, and yet the Gemara says that that's called the wife here is a symbol of umnus, of someone's profession. And if someone else is yored l'umnoso shel chavero, and he undermines his profession, he violates this isur of ves eshes re'eu lo time. But I think for our purposes, we could summarize by saying there's something called gvul. Gvul means you penetrate, you entered into my territory, and you opened up a competitive business. And the question is whether you know I can block you. Okay, so in this case, I'm going to be Reuven, representing the person who first established his business, and you'll be Shimon. And the question is whether I can block you from establishing your business in a way that it competes with me. And if you look on the first page of Yemar Makomos, this is the Sugyan Perek Lo Yachpar on Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Beis. That perek is dedicated to the laws of Shechenim, which usually means that neighbors can block each other from establishing companies or stores and different kinds of occupations which create a lot of what we would call today noise pollution. So the members of the community have a right to object and to protest against somebody coming in and creating a lot of hullabaloo. You know, you get the noise at all hours of the day and night. You know, in modern terms, you talk about clinics, for example, you know, medical clinics, dental clinics. So the fundamental law is that the Shechenim have a right to protest. If they fail to do so within a certain period of time, let's say 3 years go by, then that's called a chazaka. That's called shtika. The silence creates a chazaka. But there's a whole other area of the laws of Shechenim that's also addressed here in Perek Lo Yachpar, and that is, do Shechenim have the right to establish a livelihood in their area, in their neighborhood, to such an extent that if someone else wants to undermine their livelihood, they have a right to block that. And that's called Yored L'soch Umnoso Shel Chavero. Now when I say within a neighborhood, what do I mean by a neighborhood? So the Gemara talks about something called a mavoi. Now, what is a mavoi? For that, you really have to know Masech Erevin. But basically, in the old days, back in the day, what they used to have is what's called a chatzer. A chatzer means many houses, many homes that spill into one common courtyard. And if you have a lot of chatzeros that are connected to each other, they all fit into a mavoi if there's one common alleyway that takes them into the Rishus HaRab. in my mind, the closest thing that we have in contemporary society, and again, this is a loose connection, don't take me to the end degree, but it's something called a cul-de-sac, if you're familiar. So you enter into this cul-de-sac, and there are a lot of houses around, but there's only one common alleyway, and that's called a mavoi. And it has to do with the laws of Erevin in terms of a lechi and a korah, and how you mate tiltul from Rishus HaYochid into a mavoi. But be that as it may, for our purposes in Hilchas Shechinim, the laws of a mavui mean that every member of the mavui, every resident in that we'll call it a neighborhood, for lack of a better term, has rights to establish his occupation, what we call in Yiddish a geschäft. You know, he can create a store, he can set up a mill. And when I say a mill, I mean a mill is meant to grind, let's say, wheat or whatever it might be, create flour. But not only can I charge you if you want me to use the mill to grind your wheat, I could also rent out the mill. Mm. And that's also considered an umnus of some sort. And now Reuven, a member of the Mavui, has established his mill. And Shimon, who's also a member of the same Mavui, wants to establish his mill right across the road. So Omar Rav Huna is of the opinion that Hai Bar Mevoa, this resident of the neighborhood, the Uki Recha, he set up his Rechaim, his mill, grinding mill. The Asa Bar Mavoi Chavri, and his friend, who also lives, is a resident in the same Mavui. The Kamuki Gabe, and he wants to set up his mill right there in the same Mavui. His Dinahu, says Rav Huna, the law is Dema'akiv Iluye. He can block him, meaning Reuven can block Shimon. The Amar Le, because he claims Kapaskis Le Chiyuse. You have terminated my ability to earn, to make money and support my family. Now, this statement of Huna has really extreme ramifications. Because, you know, we're trained to believe in a free enterprise society, and anyone could open up any competitive business, and if he can do better than the first guy, that's his right. Not only is his right, but we also want to guarantee the public that they could, you know, free competition is very healthy for the public. Because, you know, after Shimon establishes his geschäft, he's going to produce something that is of higher quality, or maybe he'll reduce the prices, and that's very good. So within the context of the law of supply and demand, you know, the more supply there is, the less people have to pay for that. But here the halacha becomes very tough and really favors the first guy who got there. That's Reuven, and he already has a chazaka in that mavui. He has established his mill, and Shimon is hamotzi mechavel uraya. Shimon is yored l'tochum nosu shel chaveri, violates lo tasi gvul reyacha, and therefore Reuven has the right to block him from doing so. Now, do we accept the principle of Rav Huna? So that's not at all clear. Why? Because if you fast forward towards the end of the daf, you'll see that Rav Huna, Bereid Rav Yoshua, not to be confused with Rav Huna, has an entirely different opinion, in which he says that people who reside in a city have the right to block others, aliens who come from a different city, into their city, and they want to establish a competitive business. Mm. The only exception to that rule, Rav Huna, Bereid Rav Yoshua, establishes that if the people, this person who comes from a foreign city, wants to come into this city because he pays taxes, he pays you municipal taxes, then he's not considered a foreigner. He's considered there are many people who own, you know, they own a flat, they own an apartment here, but they live elsewhere. You know, here it's very common in Yerushalayim, you have people who live in Chutz Laaretz, right? But if he's paying local taxes, then al pidin, he becomes what's called a ben ir, and that gives him rights. So that's one extreme case. Let's say a person comes from a different city, he doesn't pay taxes locally in this city, he's a foreigner, he has no rights to compete. And the members of the city here, the first city, have a right to block him, and that's lo tasi gvul reyach. However, Here's where Rav Huna says that he disagrees. Rav Huna Brady Rav Yeshua disagrees with the first Rav Huna, and he says the following: Bar Mevoa, a Bar Mevoa din Nafshe. If both Reuven and Shimon reside in the same Mavui, and Reuven has established his business, now Shimon wants to establish a competing business, Lo Matzim Yakev. Shimon has just as much of a right to establish that business as Reuven does. The only suffix is the case in between. What happens if you have two people who reside in the same city? Both Reuven and Shimon are local talent, but they live in two different mevos, so to speak, two different neighborhoods. You know, in modern terms, it's very difficult to know exactly what's considered an ear. I have a friend of mine who lives in Bergenfield. That's his official address in the state of New Jersey. His house actually crosses at some point, or his backyard crosses over into Teaneck. You know, so I don't know how this is very noged to the laws of Yichud, because a man is allowed to be alone with a woman, even if she's married, if her husband is within the city. But you know, what does the city mean? You know, you can have two areas of New York City that are separated by an hour or 2 hours travel time, you know, commute. And then you could have two places that are in two cities, but they border on each other. So you really have to know this. It's no get to many different halachas, but how to define a city. But be it as it may, Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua is absolutely clear that if two people live in two cities, then, you know, the ones who are local here can block the ones who are coming from a foreign city. What happens if two people live in the same city but in two different mavos? In that case, Rav Huna goes back and forth. He vacillates as to what the din is. Within the same mavui, everybody is guaranteed free competition, free enterprise, and can establish a competing business. Outside the city, we're not going to let you come in. Within the same city, but with one mavui to the second mavui, that's where Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua has a doubt. That's called Boy Rabbi Huna Brei Rabbi Yeshua Bar Mavoya Bar Mavoya Chrida Mai Teku. And the Rif Paskins in this case, that since Reuven does not have a definite halacha or right, halachic legal right to block Shimon, because Shimon lives in the same city, although in a different mavui, therefore la halacha, Reuven would not be able to block Shimon. So basically, yeah, something like Hamotzi Mechavel of Harai. And the bottom line is, if I would stop right here and right now, the summary la halacha would be that basically halacha advocates or protects free enterprise, with the one exception of someone coming outside the city and invading this local city. Now, why does the Rif Paskin like Rabbi Yeshua Breda, Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua? After all, Rav Huna was of the opinion that even within the same mavui, Reuven can block Shimon. How much more so if Shimon is coming from a different mavui, and it's upgrade, we don't have to mention if Shimon comes from a different city. That was never an issue. So the reason why the Rif, and following the Rif, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch will paskin like Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua, is because the Gemara says Lema Kitanoi, that indeed the machlokas here is machlokas tanoim. And as it turns out, it's a machlokas tanoim between Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. Rav Huna, the first Shita, who in a sense is much more socialistic, you know, than free enterprise, and allows Reuven to block Shimon, even though Shimon lives in the same mavui, he is standing on the shoulders of Rav Shimon Gamliel, whereas Rav Yeshua, Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua, stands on the shoulders of the Chachamim. And since the machlokas between Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim, we paskin like the Chachamim, therefore the Psak maintains the Shita of Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua, which limits the blockage. I can only block you if you're coming from a different city. Not only that, it goes even beyond that. To what extent does the halacha advocate free enterprise? Even according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, or even according to Rav Huna, there are exceptions to the rule. One of them is not going to surprise you, and that's Torah education. The Gemara says that Ezra made a takana that for the sake of Torah education, if Shimon could do a better job than Reuven, or so he claims, in setting up a competitive school, then Reuven has no rights to bar him whatsoever, even if he's coming from another city. And that applies with regard to schooling, because the Torah, the halacha, the takana was to guarantee that the education would be on the highest level possible. The poskim write that that halacha doesn't apply to secular education; it only applies to Torah education. Fine. Then we have a second case, and you won't believe this if you've never heard of it, then it'll shock you. The halacha is very, very protective of people who sell cosmetics to women. Those are called rochlin. Rochlin in the old days were the peddlers, so to speak. You know, when I was a kid, it was a famous company called Avon. I don't know. Avon Calling, you know. Anyway, these people go from city to city, the rochlin, and they sell cosmetics to women. And Ezra made a takana on behalf of the rochlin that no one could exclude them. They can come into the city from wherever they're coming from, knock on doors, ring bells, and sell their cosmetics to guarantee that the Bnos Yisrael would have the best access and the best prices on cosmetics. Wow. Total free enterprise with regard to cosmetics. In fact, if you learn the beginning of Ksuvas, you will see over there that Psula is given a full 12 months to prepare for the chuppah, and Rashi Sheet is that the preparation is cosmetics. And you go back to the parsha of Esther, and you know, in Megillas Esther, and that this was a big to-do back in the day. Fine. So those are the exceptions to the rule. Are there any exceptions to the rule on the other end of the spectrum? Meaning, cases where even Rav Huna Brei, the Rav Yeshua, would agree that Reuven has a right to block Shimon and to completely negate the principle of free enterprise. So that's the Gemara of Dayogim. And that's the very beginning of the sugya. After Rav Huna, the Gemara says, Lema Misayele. The Gemara says, perhaps we can bring a proof text to support Rav Huna. Marchike Mitzuda Sadak Min Adak Himoli Ritza Sadak. Fakama Omer Rabba Rav Huna Ad Parsa. So here's the case. The fish have a tendency to look for their food. I think the English word is liar, if you've ever heard of it. Not liar in the sense of lie, but L-I-A-R. But anyway, forget the fancy English, because that's not going to help us. But anyway, the fish always go in a certain direction. They swim. That's where they get their, you know, the smaller fish to eat. Reuven puts out his net with food in the net, you know, bait in the net. And he placed his net exactly in the road, in the stream where the dogim have absolute regulus, you know, to go and look for their food. Shimon comes along, you know, the Ibr Chacham, of course, and he figures, wait a minute, why does Reuven have all these fish? You know, he's going to capture them in the net. And Shimon wants to put his net down in such a way that before the fish can get trapped in Reuven's, they'll get trapped in Shimon's. And the halacha is that Shimon is not allowed to do that. Absolutely not. And here there's less man to polik. Nobody argues this. And the reason is because Shimon is allowed to say to Reuven, Kapaskis lich lichiusi. All these fish are on the way into my, what do you say?
Reuven says Shimon.
I meant to say Reuven has a right to say Kapaskisli Chiyusi, all these fish are about to enter into my net. And Rashi points out, if you take a look at Rashi, he says, Afal Gav, it's about five lines down, to Lo Zachabe. It's not as if Reuven has already made a kinyan, the fish are not in his net yet. Lo Matili Yade, but Marchike Misham Di Amalei Kapaskisli Chiyusi. You see, if the fish were already in the net, that's outright Gzeil. Forget about Lotasi Gvul Reach. That would have nothing to do with Kapaskis Lihusa, Yorin Abnusa Shal Kaver, nothing. But what Shimon wants to do is get the fish before they go into Reuven's net. And the Gemara says Shimon can't do that.
Are we comparing customers to fish?
Oh, so the customers are like the fish. But the Gemara says the following, that fish are different than customers in one sense. And that is that in the case of the fish, the Gemara says, Shiny dogim diyavi seira. Seira means their sight. They've already placed their sight on their lyre. You know, that's where they're going to go. And now Reuven has already set up his fishnet with the bait in it. And therefore, there is no question in anyone's mind that the fish are on the way to get trapped in Reuven's net. Shimon is basically undermining Reuven without... Like, so you pointed out, I mean, if we compare that to the clients, to the buyers, you know, if Shimon wants to compete with Reuven, like, for example, today you have, you know, strip malls, you know, some places you'll go to, you'll find... You know, here in Israel, it's very common if you want to take your car into a Mossach, you'll find there like 20 of them, you know, right on the same street. You know, in Talpiot, it's like amazing. But this is true throughout the world, that people who work in a certain occupation tend to, you know, they tend to congregate, and that becomes the area. You know, like, for example, there's a street right near my house called Rehov Beit HaDfus. And there you have these publishing companies, one after the other, you know, printing books, and so forth and so on. So what you'll find is that with regard to clients, you know, yesh for yesh, you can never predict where a client is going to buy. You know, there's so many factors that go into his final decision as to whether he'll go into Reuven's shop or Shimon's shop. So Shimon has a right to say to Reuven, countering his argument, I'm not guilty of paskas lechiyus. So there are plenty of clients, you know, out in the market. And therefore, the case of the fish is the exception. So here I want to show you a brilliant insight of the Mordechai, which you'll see on page 2. So if you just flip your page, do you see on the left column it says, it's like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's above the Rambam on the left side. Do you see where it says Baba Basra with a Mordechai in the middle? So the Mordechai says the following. What happens if you have a Mavui that is closed on three sides? There's only one way of entering into this cul-de-sac. Reuven's store is like at the back of this cul-de-sac. And Shimon decides he's going to place his chanus at the gate, at the entryway, in such a way that no one can get access to Reuven's store without passing by Shimon's store.
Passing by or passing through?
I don't know if it's without seeing Shimon's store. Let's just give it, you know, a more general thing. And here the Mordechai says, in the name of one of the earlier Rishonim, that Nira de Yochali Akiv Olaf. Now I want you to cover the next two words in the Mordechai, because the next two words are going to change the whole pshat in the Mordechai. What I'm going to present to you now is what I think is the understanding of the Mordechai according to the Ramah against the Machaber and Shulchan Aruch. I think. And then I'll try to prove this to you. The statement of the Mordechai has nothing to do with the machlokas between Rav Huna and Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua. Even Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua, who allows a more liberal open market, free enterprise, that's only because in a free market, everyone who opens a store, a business, is competing with everyone else, and you can never guarantee who's going to go where. But if the circumstance would arise, to use the term of the Ramah, of Bari Hezekah, which means that it's absolutely predictable that Reuven is going to be driven out of business because Shimon placed his store in a certain position, a certain location, that no one's going to even get to Reuven. You know, by the time they pay, again, I'm assuming that, you know, Shimon is a smart entrepreneur and, you know, he's able to create some sort of a technology, well, okay, I don't know, the Gemara's time technology, but here we would call it technology, in which, you know, there's no question that even Google can't compete with it. And therefore, the Ramah says that that's Bari Hazik. Meaning, even Rav Huda Breda Rav Yeshua, who has this liberal view towards free enterprise, even he ultimately has his limitation, where he says, this you can't do, Shimon, no offense, Reuven has right to block it. And that is Bari Hezekah. Now, where does the Ramah come off saying that if it's Bari Hezekah, Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua is going to throw in the towel and say, I agree with you, Rav Huna. And what's the answer?
The fish,
exactly. What the Mordechai saw in the case of fish was a prerequisite. As I said to you before, no one argues that the case of the fish is kapaskas lechiyusa. Because this is the way things go. If you accept the Ramah, and therefore you accept the Mordechai, then in general, I'm going to see this in the post-Kim, the question of competition depends upon the following issue. It all hinges, it comes down to this. is this competition going to run Reuven out of business? Or is there plenty of room for both of them? Laissez-faire. You know, these lokhim, lekuchos will come to Shimon, and these will go to Reuven. When is it Bar Yazeka? That's what I don't know. And that's where all the confusion is going to come up, you know, in the post.
The Bar Yazeka is on the result. Is it going to put Reuven out of business? How did you see that in the cases? I saw it more as it guaranteed that you're going to be taking away clients that were originally destined for Reuven.
So again, that's the impression you get from the Ramah. I think I have for you did I give you page 5? Or only up to I only gave up to page 4. Okay. So the Ramah is on page 5. I'll glean it. I'll try to read it to you. But let me just, before we get to your question, let's go backtrack to the Mordechai. The Mordechai adds here 2 words. And these 2 words just blow everything I told you, blow it out of the water. Why? Because the Mordechai says, Kidder Avhuna. What do you understand from those 2 words? Kidder Avhuna. Again, keep in mind, the Mordechai is quoting earlier Rishonim. He's quoting somebody by the name of the Asapsus. That was his name. Right? So he came up with this idea, but he says, Kidder Avhuna.
The first Rav Huna.
So the Shulchan Aruch in base. First, let's see in Beis Yosef, which I think should be on page 3. You see the Beis Yosef, Avi Asaf. He says, "V'nir de Avi Asaf." This is the quote of the Mordechai. Sofar de loker Rav Huna berei de Rav Yoshua. He would not be reconcilable with Rav Huna berei de Rav Yoshua. The imkain and therefore the didan the karmel and kravuna braid rav yeshua lo matzi me'akivolov. We cannot accept the psak of the avi asaf, which is the Mordechai, because the Mordechai himself says it's contingent upon rav huna. We don't accept rav huna, meaning rav huna braid rav yeshua would never accept this principle. And since, despite the fact that Shimon is placing his geshäft right there at the entrance into the Mavui in such a way that everyone's going to have to pass, nevertheless, he has a right to say to Reuven, do me something. You know, you want to compete with me? You compete with me. Find a way. Now, how is Reuven going to get the customers to come into his shop? So that's an interesting sugya unto itself. Again, we're only touching the tip of the iceberg. And that is, what are the limits of free enterprise? And the Gemara has the following case. You start giving out free gifts. For example, when I was a kid, they wanted you to join a bank. They would actually offer you toasters. You know, free toasters. You know? It was great, you know.
Popcorn machine.
Now, in a competitive market, which we call laissez-faire, you know, like in our capitalistic society, the sky's the limit. If I can allure you into my shop by selling you the Brooklyn Bridge, to use that phrase, then there are no laws that... I mean, even when labor unions started forming, you know, which was also a sort of a limitation on free enterprise, there was so much so much objection to labor unions and so forth and so on. But be that as it may, in a free capital society, this is what we have. We have all this. And at what point does the halacha finally say ad kan? So the Gemara first has a case, which is also on the same page, Chaf Aleph there that you have in Lo Yachbar, where Reuven says to Shimon, they're selling things for children, and Shimon starts giving out sweets. So he starts giving out nuts, you know, walnuts. So when Reuven complains, he says, you take away all my children, all my clients. So Shimon says, well, why don't you give out almonds? You know, almonds are more expensive, but the children like almonds even more than they like walnuts. And basically, this leads to free enterprise. I'll give you another example. What happens when you slash prices? So I can come into your territory and open up a competitive store and, you know, put up a sign, grand opening, and 50% off on all items, you know what I'm saying? And nobody's going to come into your store because they'd be crazy to do so. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about someone who had a synagogue And someone else opened up a different synagogue, and the people started going to the second synagogue. Now, what is the first one claiming? He says that he invested a tremendous amount of money in buying the synagogue, and he built up a clientele. He can't sell the synagogue. It's like it has almost zero value on the real estate market. Narvas, the one who opened up the second synagogue, claims that the people in the first synagogue didn't like the Nusach, or they didn't like the Balkari or the Chazan, and therefore he was competing. And Rav Moshe goes through this long tshuva to figure out if this is called Paskas Lechiyusa, and is it a case where they had no right to open up the second shul. Then the question even becomes more complicated. Let's say we come to the conclusion they had no right to open up the second shul. How far does the halacha go in that case? Mm. Are we going to sell the second shul? I mean, who's going to suffer the loss? It gets very, very complicated. But what I wanted to show you is the Rambam here on the bottom of your page 2. The Rambam makes a very unique integration of the two parts of Hilchos Shechinim. As I told you at the outset, the laws of Shechinim divide up into two major issues. One is that the local people want to complain and protest against a geshäft, which is making a lot of noise. And the other issue is someone in this mavui wants to complain against competitive business. And the Rambam seems to integrate the two into one. Take a look at the Lashon HaRambam, Perek Vav Halacha, Halacha Ches. Kofin b'nei mavui ze et ze, shlo lahoshiv b'neihem lo chayat v'lo bursi, bursi is a tanner, v'lo echad mi bale ha'umnus. Because this is going to cause them a tremendous loss. We know in our real estate market today, if there's noise around, automatically the price of the real estate goes down. For one simple reason, for sure, because it's very hard to sell such a piece of property. So if you have a choice of two properties, one has noise pollution, the other doesn't, the price is going to be significantly different. So the Bnei Mavui has a right. But Hayasham B'Mavui Echad Mi Bnei HaMavui Uman. But what happens if Feta complain? You know, there's one Uman that's already there. He's one of the Bnei Mavui. V'lo Michuba. And they let it go by. So if they let it go by, that's called Shtika Koda. This is already a sugi in the third paragraph of Bavasa called Cheskas Habatin. Oh, Shahaisa Sham Merchatz O Chanus O Rechaim. These are all things that, you know, they attract a lot of traffic and a lot of noise. And now all of a sudden the Rambam notices, without even taking a pause, he shifts into the second issue in Hilchos Shechinim, the competition issue. Uba Chavero V'Osa Merchatz Acheres Kineged. Kinegdo, O Tchon Acheres, Tchon is this grinding mill. Eino Yochel Limono. He can't block him. In other words, he could have blocked him because he's adding a noise element into the community, and he's not inferior to any other than Bnei Mavui, we have a right to protest. But since Reuven has already established that very same umnus, and the people of Mochel, then you and I would have said, but wait a minute, it's increasing the noise level, right? But the Rambam is not learning it like that. The Rambam is learning like it's a din in the cheft of the umnus, you know. If that umnus has already been well established and anchored and accepted in that community, eino yochel lemono v'lomolo ata posek chayai. And all of a sudden, we're no longer talking about the fact that the Bnei HaMavui have accepted the umnus. But we're talking about the fact that Reuven, who established his chanus or his mill, has no rights to block Shimon. And not only that, afilu hayu b'bnei mavui acher, this we saw in the Rif, if you remember, even if the person who wants to create this competitive chanus comes from a different mavui, ein yecholim lemono. And why? So I would have said, because that's not called Hasogas Gvul Reacha, since we have to guarantee that everyone lives in that Mavui, and each member of the Mavui or each member of the city has rights to that Gvul. The Gvul belongs to everyone. But the Rambam says, no. Shari Yesh Bein Amos Umnus. The Rambam comes back, square one, to the issue of noise pollution. And then he says, Aval Ger. Now we're not talking about a convert here. Ger is an alien who comes from a different city. The Rambam uses the word Medina. Very often, if you open up Rambam Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Alef Halacha Alef, you'll see that the word Medina is synonymous in the Rambam's language with ear. So this Ger comes from Medina Acher, it's a different city. Shevo Lassos Chanus, B'tzad Chanus, Yusef Merchat, B'tzad Chanus, Merchat Shalzeh. Yesh lahem limono. What is that word lahem? Is it Lashon Yachid or Lashon Rabbim? That's very strange. Why is the Rabbim talking about the Rabbim over here? Who wants to get up and kick out this guy who comes from a different city?
Who owns
the chanus? He's losing his business. No, yesh lahem limono. Again, flipping back into the halach of Shechedim, who want to get this guy out of here because genug shine, we got enough noise as is, you know.
What, but they can't say it to someone from the same Medina?
So again, it depends. Before I saw the Rambam, I would have answered you the following. We have to guarantee in a free enterprise the rights of competition for those who have rights in this locale. We don't have to guarantee for someone else who's coming to compete with these local people.
But what about the noise?
Oh, so the noise issue is a separate independent issue. That's what I would have said intuitively.
Right,
meaning, if the people already gave up on the noise, you know, they were shoseik, that's it. Why does the Rambam integrate these two issues together?
Because he's saying that the one affects the other.
How do you understand?
Rambam is saying that if you live there already, then you have the right to open up a second one, even though it's adding more noise. And the other people around there can't stop you. Because your right as a resident to have a business overrides their right to have quiet. But if someone else is coming in...
Well, it overrides because they were shoseik, you mean? Or what?
Yeah, even though he's...
That's how I understood the rabbi.
Yes, but because he's accepting the principle that more noise is undesirable. The haraya, if somebody comes from outside, then the residents can say, we don't want more noise. I already have that same kind of noise. No, they have the right to say, we don't want you. So he's tying them together because one overrides the other.
But at the end of the day, if the Rambam understood the way we understood, that the ben mavui could block someone else because of kopaskas lichiyusin,
no,
right?
No, he can't.
You see, he says, the Rambam says...
The lahen, you're focusing on the lahen. The residents can block someone else.
But again, let's backtrack. The Rambam is not oblivious to the sugya bav basra. How do I know that? You know, sometimes the Rambam has a Yushalmi or a Tosefta or something else, but look at the Rambam. He says, any yochel limono, what was the issue? Again, the Rambam is going to say that he is a member of the city, he's a resident of the city, or he pays taxes in the city. Any yochel limono, velomolo ata posek chaya.
That's true.
So it sounds like the Rambam is addressing the competition issue.
Of course he is. I'm saying the reason why he's tying them together is because they both apply, but one overrides the other.
No, but wait, maybe my question is not clear. What I'm asking is the following. If the halacha allows Reuven, in certain cases, to say, ata posek chayai, that was the whole sugya that we learned, and the Rambam seems to be aware of that, then forget about the issue of noise. Why doesn't Reuven have the right to say to Shimon, who comes from elsewhere, you're an alien, you don't have rights here in this month, we ata posek chayai.
You do have the right.
He does have the right. So why?
If you come from outside, you do have the right.
So if he has that right, why doesn't the Rambam tell me that?
If he's come from outside, he has the right.
The Rambam only says that he cannot say ata posek chayai. Why? Because sheyesh beinehem osa umnus. Forget about that. That could be a different issue. Again, if the Rambam wants to explain why Reuven has the right or doesn't have the right to say ata posek chayai, then the language of the Rambam, harei yesh beinehem osa umnus, seems to be totally irrelevant. That could be relevant if the people in the mavui want to limit the noise pollution. But no, the Rambam's not talking about that. The Rambam is talking about ata posek chayai
because he is conflating them. And one, you're right.
But it's a bilbil.
I'm explaining. Reuven has a
You're
right.
You're fighting with me today. Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
I think this is what the Rambam is saying. My reading of it reads this way: that the inability for Reuven to stop somebody by saying Ataposek Lichayai falls away when that other person is a resident. And he says, but I have a right to open mine. I have a right to live as much as you have a right to live. And I have the right to make noise if the right to make noise has already been established.
I agree with you 1,000%, but I can't read that into the Rambam. I don't know.
It's only when somebody's coming from outside that the residents or the person can say, we don't want you here, either you're adding too much noise or you're posek to the chaye of one of the residents.
But I'm asking, where? Show me again, if you could pinpoint.
You have to read the whole thing together to see.
No, but I'm saying, at what point in the Rambam, if you could just pinpoint one sentence in the Rambam that indicates that Reuven can block Shimon because of Ata Posig Chai? Where is that in the Rambam? How come I don't see that?
Someone from outside.
Where? Show it to me inside.
Okay. So
I don't see it.
How do we know that
he says Aval ger mi medina acheres? And here the Rambam says it. He says that yesh lahem limono, which I understood to say, maybe I'm wrong, that, you know, we don't want you here. You know, but why we don't want you here? I mean, what about ata posek chaya? You know, if the Rambam had completely undermined and neutralized the principle of ata posek chaya, then fine. You know, basically the Rambam is telling you it all boils down to kashenim, and maybe within the same mavur, you know, for the sake of guaranteeing the rights of all the residents, we will, in a sense, you know, that'll tip the balance, you know, in this very sensitive, you know, balance of noise pollution. Meaning, we have the individual rights versus the community rights.
Right.
That I can understand. And then the whole issue in this Rambam would boil down to when do the members of a community have the right to say, we can't tolerate this noise or this traffic or whatever it is.
Okay, so
that would have been great. But if the Rambam does accept the principle of ata posek chayai, which guarantees a person individual rights, not because of noise pollution or traffic, but because it's undermining his occupation, then why does the Rambam, when he talks about the difference between people who live in this area and someone who comes from the door, all of a sudden he shifts over, I think, to the issue of pollution? He should have first said, wait a minute, forget about pollution. And I would have even said a tremendous nafkamina. If every single member of the community is willing to sign off a waiver, you know, that we don't mind, you know, we've got one mill, let's take another mill, you know, it's worth it for us for whatever reason. I still think, logically, what about the individual right of Reuven? So you have this guy Shimon who's coming from, you know, from India, you know, and he decides he's going to plop down his merchatz right in the nose of Reuven's merchatz across the road. And the Rambam seems to be saying that my only issue is whether the people here are objecting or not. And if every last guy in the Mavui signs a waiver, you know, like here, I don't know if you've seen it in your neighborhood, but I know near the ELC, you've got these big signs that say, you know, we're doing this, we're doing that, you know, we're expanding. Anybody who wants to come and complain, call this number in the municipality. You know? So everyone signed a waiver, anachnu maskimim pe'echad, come and create your chandus. It's worth it for us, it's good for us, whatever. But what about the ata posek chaya?
So you want to know where in the Rambam I'm getting this? Right by the little ches in the brackets. Yesh lehem lamano. I'm reading that Reuven also, as a resident, can stop him as posek chaya. I'll tell you where it is.
Okay, maybe. That's maybe you're right. Maybe you could push that in. I think I already used up more time than I could. If you get a chance to look at the Shulchan Aruch here and the Pischei Tshuva, it's fascinating what's going on over here, because the halacha is really trying to create a very sensitive balance here between the rights of the public, the rights of the individual, the rights of the residents, and the right of every Jew to create a business and an occupation. So all we did today was give you just a little bit of an overview. And
so if America was like a halakhically run society,
right?
So like,
I was getting Israel to be a halakhically run society.
Well, so Walmart going into like small towns and, you know, opening up stores and putting like smaller mom and pop shops out of business would be exactly this, because the mom and pop shop is like a local resident, and you have this like gear coming in from the outside, and
right.
So
the halacha is not giving just laissez-faire, an open-ended and free competition.
Right.
According to Rav Huna, nobody, even the B'nai Mavi, have a right to compete with me.
But then how would that...
And even if we reject Rav Huna, the Mardechai, the way the Rama understands, is going to say that we still, even in the turf of Rav Huna, Rav Yeshua, accept the fact that if it's real paskas lechiyusa, you take all my clients, like the case of the fish, then the guy can be blocked for competing.
And then how does this jive with, say, the modern society of like having an internet store that just is blowing out like cheaper prices than everywhere else locally? Does that, it's like a different kind of...
So for that, I wanted you to see, the Ramah, which is on page 4. It's all the way in the bottom of the page. It's about 5 lines up before the end of the page. Yesh Omrim. You have it?
From the bottom one? The last?
Yeah, it's underlined. Yesh Omrim, Yudal. Yesh Omrim Hod B'nei Ir Yechol Limchos B'nei Ir Acheres. Right, when we overstep the end boundary of free enterprise in Halacha, and this guy's coming from another city. Hainu dafka b'dalekup seydelulakuchos. That the purchasers, you know, the clients will not lose something. Why? Shemochin kishar b'nei o'ir. Basically, these guys are coming from another city, and they're selling more or less the same store at the same price. The gams chorosim ainu tovioser mishel b'nei o'ir. They're not giving you neither a better price nor better quality. And if you take a look at the Sma, the Sefer Mira Sei Naim on the left side, he writes, Hav Beis Yosef Kostin Mestabra Lomadu Hua Din Im Hiyosa Ra, which probably means that if this guy from the other city wants to sell inferior quality, then Havile Ketre Minim, he's not really competing with you. You're selling the high class stuff, like the custom made suits, you know, and this guy's selling, you know, the cheap shirts that you buy for $18 in I don't know where you buy them, in one of those department stores, right? So it's very interesting that once again we're seeing the halacha advocate in favor of free enterprise, a competition, even with regard to Rav Huda Breda Rav Yeshua's admission that if they're coming from a different city, we have a right to block them, but no.
Well, it's the same product.
Same product. If the quality is better, if the price is better, we have to guarantee this for the benefit of the lekuchos. Competition is a healthy thing.
And if it's lower
Not
quality.
Only that, even if the quality is lower, it's a different min, says the Sma. And this is fascinating because it's going to... So in the Tshuva Ramosh about synagogues, he's going to talk about the fact that one synagogue, you know, appeals to Persians, you know, and the other synagogue appeals to Lithuanians, you know.
To show that they don't compete with one another.
That's not called competition. Uh-huh. So, for example, the Amic Learning Center, you know, opened up in Baca. So, wait a minute, we're competing with like 15 shuls, I don't know how many.
Yeah.
But the answer is that we have something unique that's different than every other one. So, we're really not competing with them. The only problem is that there's always going to be an overlap.
Yeah.
There's always a guy who, let's say he's Persian, but... You know, if it's closer, he'll daven with the Ashkenazi.
Yeah.
Or, for example, I know in my neighborhood in Har Nof, I very often daven with the Sfaradim. It's literally next door to my house. And they're a bunch of nice guys, and sometimes they even ask me to say Dvar Torah Shimichar Mayrim. So I love davening with the Sfaradim. There's always going to be some overlap in competition. It's never going to be purely, oh, it's a different product. Even a fellow who buys top quality suits and shirts, sometimes, if it's convenient for him or whatever reason, he'll go to the local, you know, cheapo store. He's not going to schlep to Goldman and to Saks Fifth Avenue or whatever it is, and he'll pay something, he'll get something cheap. So there's always going to be some element of competition. But if it's fundamentally different, then we can set up a quality or a price difference between, you know, Shimon's coming from another city and marketing his product and Reuven's product, then at least what we're seeing here, Ramah / Sma, is that then we're in favor of free enterprise. But in terms of, you know, offering gifts, so that's going to be the sugya here on your page 1 in Bava Basra Chof Aleph, where the Gemara says... Rabbi Yehuda Omer, it's about, I'd say, 15 lines down, Lo yechalik chenvoni kloyos ve'gozim litinokos. That this is already unfair business practice, like giving out free gifts. Nifnei shemar gilon etzlo. V'chachomim atirim. The chachomim say it's okay. Why? Because if I'm giving out egozim, you have the ability to give out shkevim. You know, you can give out almonds. And again, the halacha seems to be advocating in favor of free enterprise, what they call laissez-faire. But on the other hand, whereas I think the Western culture that we live in takes laissez-faire to its extreme, the halacha still has this principle of lo tasig v'ul reyacha, kapaskas lechaya. Why the Rambam decided to integrate that together with the laws of Shechinim and noise pollution, I don't know. But that's what's happening here. So the halacha is being, you know, very sensitive here to all the shitas. If you take Rav Huna says, you know, if you live in the same mavli, we're not going to guarantee Shimon those rights because Reuven has a geshäft that's up and running, and you're going to just run him out of business. And even Rav Huna, Rav Yeshua, perhaps would agree in certain cases that he has the right, that Reuven has the right to block Shimon. Mm-hmm. So it's not absolute free enterprise. If somebody tells you, wait a minute, halacha advocates, like Western society, free competition, it's really not meduyak. That's not accurate to say that. The halacha has to be sensitive to a lot of different needs and different peoples. And lo tasig v'ul reyacha is very, very fundamental.
Interesting.
You know, Western society, it's, you know, it's...
the Wild West.
That's it. Here in Israel, it's very fascinating because there is a branch of law called Mishpat HaEvri. And traditionally, in the makeup of every Supreme Court here, whatever Mahamad, they usually have one representative of Mishpat HaEvri. And in law school here, like at Hebrew University, they have what's called an elective course in law. You know, I think Mishpat HaEvri in some law schools here is a requirement. Let's say one semester. Beyond that, it's electives. But I think what's happening, if I have my finger on the pulse, is that gradually there's becoming a more and more of respect for Hebrew law.
Mm.
And that's not anti-Zionist, meaning even the secularists who claim, oh, we don't, you know, Hebrew law is primitive, it's from a different society, you know, they have that secular agenda. But even so, there is an agenda on a Zionist level. Let's go back to our original sources. You know, we have a tradition that goes back thousands of years. And what's happening is that gradually there is an awareness that's increasing, intensifying in the secular circles that, you know what, maybe Hebrew law is not so prosaic, it's not so primitive. And it spans generations and it has something to address even to contemporary society. So on the one hand, you know, when one of the judges will mention Hebrew law, you know, they'll shush him up because they, you know, our law is built on British law, or on Turkish law, or American law. You know, we have a long secular tradition. Well, what are you telling me? This stuff from Rabbi so-and-so from 16th century ago, who cares? But on the other hand, gradually, I mean, it's come to the point where I think it's in Korea or someplace out in the Asian East, the goyim are beginning to recognize the greatness of Talmudic law. They're starting to buy shasim or something.
In Korea, they're learning Gemara.
In Korea, you know, saying now I don't know if they understand the Gemara. You know, you need a tradition, you need a rebbe. But the fact that they respect it, why can't we respect it here in our own country?
It's a
All right.